Welcome to yet another edition of the BJ and Bucher podcast on the cycle. He is BJ Armstrong. I am Rick Bucher, and he is live and has returned from Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. It's good to have you back. How was it?
You know, Rick, it was very interesting. Very interesting country. First of all, I want to say it's a very beautiful country, and the accommodations and the people and the hospitality were fabulous. It was great people. And I thought the Olympics were just an incredible display of show of competition, sports, you know, and what they were able to do there. So I have no complaints there, but it was very interesting to have an opportunity to see the country and especially experience the Olympics.
Okay, now that you've done the Chamber of Commerce piece, you're not there anymore, so you can speak the truth. You don't have to flower it up.
The thing is, I didn't really know what to expect. Didn't know what to expect here. I only knew what I read online and what I've read through various outlets and here in the American media, what I saw on television. But what I experienced was very different than what was being portrayed in the media. So in all honesty, it was great. I really had a great time. I really think it's a beautiful country. Clearly, they have their issues like everyone else does in the world. But overall, we had a great time there. And I don't think anyone there that experienced it, especially that was there with the basketball team, had any complaints about our experience there and how they treated us.
So you never felt in danger?
I did not.
How many security people did you have with you at all times?
Look, we had our security just like every other, you know, group had their security when you're moving around the city and just getting to where you had to get to. The traffic, I mean, it was very difficult to get from place to place. But overall, I really have no complaints about, you know, our experience there. It was top notch, very, very, very well done. You know, okay. I applaud the people there.
So can I be honest with you?
Yes, you may.
So I talked to your people from Wasserman who are here about halfway through your trip. Mm-hmm. And they said, BJ hates it. And then you and I spoke, and you did talk, and I think you referenced the traffic about going to the game. I think you were going to the gold medal game.
The game was, it was like a 12-hour experience, getting to the game, then getting back. So that was very, very difficult. If there was one thing that I was disappointed in, it was I wasn't able to get out and mm-hmm. just walk around and do things that I really would have liked to experience. But under the circumstances, due to the Olympics, all the things that, you know, we were an hour away where we were staying from any other activities. So other than me just being able to just kind of go out on my own and kind of venture out, that was the only thing that I was really disappointed in.
Yeah.
And you did that for obvious reasons, right? I didn't want to just be venturing out in places during that time.
Sure.
But other than that, I really have no complaints. I mean, it really was like, I thought it was, you know, I thought they did a terrific job.
Well, the poverty and some of the issues that are there in Rio, and that from what I've heard are visible. They're painfully apparent.
Now, that was one of the things that really was shocking. You know, the poverty and what, because you got to go right through it.
Yeah.
So the poverty was one of the things that, you know, you talk about poverty, and you know, only thing I can compare it to, I've only lived in this country.
Right.
And
so you grew up in Detroit. I mean, you grew up near 8 Mile, right?
Yeah, I grew up right there in that area. But then when you see this level of poverty, it's a whole different take, a whole different level. So, you know, I've had the fortune, I've been around a few places, but that was kind of, because you'll be in this place that's like Beverly Hills, and then suddenly right across the street, you have the worst of the worst in the poverty. So that was kind of, you know, unique in itself, that you have such extremes. You know, you have extreme wealth and you have extreme poverty. So you can definitely see the problems that exist in the country as far as resources. And there's really, from what I could see, there was really like no middle class, nothing in between, either extreme poverty or extreme wealth. And there was definitely, you saw a separation there.
Were you able to go and see any of the other events? Did you see anything, any events other than men's basketball?
I did not, just because of where we were staying, our location. It was just very difficult to get to. You know, we were so far away, literally with no traffic, we were an hour away. So I did not get a chance to go to any other events. It was great that we had access through the local television there, and we had access on the place where we were staying, where we could see all the other events, but I didn't personally get to any other event.
Yeah. So now, and you didn't answer the question, how many security people did you have with you?
We had quite a few as a group. That was not a problem.
And what was your code name?
I was the dumb American. I didn't speak any other languages, so I was good under Armstrong. Armstrong was good. That was my code name.
So, and do they favor Glocks or AK-47s? Yeah. Which
you know, I have a photo. You know, here in America, you know, you just to see people just carrying, like, you know, weapons all the time.
Right.
You know, that was one of the things. It took a couple of days. You know, you're just, you know, you're walking to the bus and there's just like, you know, 50 people with just like assault rifles. You know what I mean? And you're like, okay. They're not carrying those. They're carrying those for a reason, right?
Right,
so
right.
I felt very comfortable and very safe there, let's say that.
All right. So you had a number of – how many total clients did you have participating or playing in men's basketball there?
We had – I don't know, quote me. I think we had like 7 guys that were there.
Okay.
We had like 7. But I didn't get a chance to see any of the guys other than they were playing the American team. But just because of the travel, I mean, literally, you couldn't get around.
And what did you think of the men's basketball? What did you think of Team USA?
Overall, you can definitely see the game is beginning to take shape and evolve. You know, the game is beginning. I saw more teams playing full court basketball, playing 94 feet. That was the first time that I go to a game and like everyone was pressing. Hmm. You know, everyone was picking up and trying to create offense with their defense. I thought that was interesting. Because most of the teams always play this control. We're going to slow the pace of the game down. We're going to take a good shot, da-da-da-da. Now everyone was trying to play with pace, which I thought was very interesting from a global perspective. I thought the American team was, you know, they have such an advantage. The American, from as far as I can remember, has always had an advantage because of speed and quickness.
Yep.
Their versatility is unmatched globally. But I also made the comment this year, this was the first time I saw other countries pressing the USA. I thought it was quite interesting.
Hmm.
The intimidation is kind of...
It's not there.
And this is the first time, if you saw the game, I mean, the Americans played very well versus Serbia, but Serbia picked them up full court. Australia clearly had enough NBA players where there wasn't any intimidation there.
Yeah.
They played well. France was another country. So you see the American idea of how to play basketball beginning to seep in. They just can't match us with the athleticism and the athletic ability. The speed and quickness of the game is still overmatched them. But you can see, you know, at some point here, they're going to be able to have an athlete or two, and they're going to be able to play that game because, you know, you can see the way they're starting to play now.
Yeah. I can't help but feel in what I watched, and it was difficult to watch. There's a difficulty here because, to me, the Olympics reflect the highest ideal of every sport. Like, that's what the attraction is. Even in gymnastics, where we dominate, in the same way that we dominate in basketball, but you see it played, and it's played at such a high level, or it's performed at such a high level, that you still appreciate it. And I feel as if when I'm watching Team USA, or I'm watching just Olympic basketball, it's not always attractive. It's not always basketball at what I consider the highest level, if that makes sense. And that's what makes it difficult. And I feel like cross purposes, it's like, what, am I spoiled? I don't appreciate that these guys are winning gold. I don't appreciate the circumstances that they're under. And yet the brand of basketball, the style of basketball, some of the elements that are missing, I feel like there are shortcuts taken as a viewer, as an observer. It does not appeal to me.
Well, you know, one of the interesting things is when, you know, I would watch the Olympics, I'm sure like most, would you watch it at home and it would be late and you'd watch it when you go home, but you're far away. We're here in the States. When
yes.
I got there, it had a different vibe, it had a different energy. And one of the things is when I was watching the gymnastics, there was a certain innocence about watching it.
Yeah.
You know, like these young women were, you didn't know what was going to happen, right? There was like anyone could win, something could happen, you know, every flip and every move, you were like there. When you're watching men's basketball, you know, like, kind of expect them to win. You
right.
know,
it, well,
it was just, and that's one thing that I was like, I just wanted the other teams to be better.
Yeah.
You know, like, well, I wanted us to win, but I wanted to see a good game.
So what do you think of Jerry Colangelo's thing, well, we're challenging other countries to be better? I find that kind of odd because I'm thinking, you think they're not trying to be the best that they can be? I mean, do you have any reason to believe, with your experience and understanding of talent across around the world, that other countries are not putting their best foot forward in the Olympics?
It's not that I don't think they're putting their best foot forward. I think it takes them to have a different way of thinking about basketball as it pertains to competing at the highest level.
How so?
Our infrastructure and grassroots program, bar none, is allowing the best athletes, the best players to surface. You know, we're getting the best players at 16, 17, 18 years of age. They have a structure there in the way that they coming up through their grassroots program to their infrastructure that to me is not allowing these young people to think outside of the box because it's been done that way for so long.
Hmm.
I think it's time now, if they're going to compete at the highest level,
yeah.
If you're going to beat the United States, you have to see what is it that they're doing that those players are playing a different game than the rest of the world is playing. They have a creative way of playing. You know, when you watch a Kyrie Irving, okay, you mean to tell me that when you watch Kyrie and what he's doing and creatively how he plays, you mean to tell me that there's not another place in the world where a player can have that same creative expression of how he plays basketball? That way of playing is not encouraged in other places.
Yeah.
But if you're going to beat the United States, you can't just beat them running an offense or just executing. You have to be able to play outside of the game and have a creative way to express yourself and do all the things that you're going to need to do if you're going to compete.
Yeah.
Now, if they don't, they're going to continue to have the same results. You're not going to beat this team without utilizing speed and quickness. But more importantly, you got to think a different way. There has to be a new way of going about this because clearly this is not going to cut it from my perspective and
yeah.
just what I was able to see. And I think that's what Jerry was saying.
The other part is that I don't believe, well, some guys said it. DeAndre Jordan said, you know, a gold medal means more than an NBA championship. I have a hard time believing that, especially for guys who know what winning an NBA championship is like, simply because I believe that what you have to go through to achieve something is what gives it its value. Like some of us can have the most inconsequential achievement. I can learn how to play a piece on the piano that's incredibly difficult. It takes me years to master it. And yet that would be a massive accomplishment compared to something else. I letter in college, you know, or whatever. I'm a starter on it, whatever it might be. It has to do with the difficulty in the achievement. To me, winning an NBA championship is infinitely harder than winning a gold medal in basketball if you're competing for Team USA. Is there any reason for me to think different about that?
At my age today, I understand what DeAndre's saying. And, you know, when you look at the team, I always look at the team and I go, you know, what am I really expecting from these guys? Most of these guys have never won any place.
Right.
Most of the guys on Team USA haven't won an NBA championship. I mean, let's count them out. I mean, you got Draymond, you have Klay, you have Kyrie Irving.
That might be it.
Okay. Now, after that, how often do you actually get an opportunity to experience winning the last game of a season? So for these guys who've never experienced that,
okay.
They've never experienced. See, most players will go through their whole career and never understand play with the expectations to win a championship. Think about that, Rick. You play, but you never expect to actually win. You know, you'll say it. You know, you'll do an interview. We're just playing for a championship. You know, we same interview. You know, you
right,
do the same
right,
thing.
Right.
How many people actually have an opportunity to do it and
right,
believe it?
Right.
Now, for the first time, many of them had to win because that was the expectation. There was no, well, we just won a medal.
But that's different. This is different. That's different. That's different than my question.
But it's not different for them because you and I have the experience. They've never won anything. They didn't win in college. You know, they didn't win in high school. Where have they won? So now they get an opportunity to win. And for them,
yep,
well, you see it all the time.
But they can't make that comparison. You can say, this is the greatest thing that's ever happened to me.
We can't make the comparison.
You can't say, no, they can't say, they can't make the comparison that it's better than an NBA championship because for just what you said. They've never played for an NBA championship. So how are you going to tell me a gold medal is better? How are you going to tell me that? You don't know what the other is. If Draymond Green says to me, if Klay Thompson says to me, if Kyrie Irving says to me, this is better than winning an NBA championship. And by the way, I think Kyrie said something like that, but he said it before he won the gold medal, and I'm still not believing it. Who DeAndre Jordan? What are you saying? Like, if Tim Hardaway said it to me, he said, "This means more to me. I believe this is bigger than winning an NBA championship." Okay, that's fine. That's what you believe because you've won a gold medal, but you haven't won an NBA championship. That's different. DeAndre Jordan is saying you definitively telling all of us, you know what? This is bigger than winning an NBA championship. DeAndre, with all due respect, shut up.
Rick, he's a young kid. I remember I asked Magic after those guys. I saw those guys.
What, 92?
In 92. Okay. I remember, I think all of us who've had an opportunity to win. I didn't participate in the Olympics, but all of us who've had an opportunity to win a championship, I think we will agree that it is very difficult if you're playing 100-something games as comparing to what you win 8 games.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. It's no comparison.
More than that. You got what? Yeah.
But you know what? I would imagine if you won a gold medal at like 19 years old.
Yeah.
Right? I would imagine if you're 19. That's huge.
Yeah.
I would imagine in Magic Johnson's case, and then you take the other extreme. You know, he won, what, 5 championships.
Yeah.
And then suddenly in the condition and all the things that happened for him at that particular time, that 92 gold medal had a special meaning for
him.
No
doubt. No doubt. Right, no doubt.
So I think in defense of what they're saying is, you know what? Many of the players that play in these events, like Steph Curry, they use this winning as a catalyst to propel them into a different stratosphere. And winning this gold medal for DeAndre, he may be the player that we may say a year or two from now be like, this gold medal experience propelled him to the next. I saw it happen with Derrick Rose when he played in the World Championships. I saw it happen for Steph Curry. He's the latest. I saw it happen for Klay Thompson. A lot of these players, winning does something. It changes.
Yeah, yeah.
It changes you.
Yeah.
And for him at this time, DeAndre Jordan, I saw his personality really come out this year.
I wonder how much of it is, too, and we all have this experience, when you're surrounded by the best in what you do, and you aren't necessarily always surrounded by them, or you're surrounded by people that go to a higher standard that you've ever been surrounded by, that it causes you to raise your own bar, to expand your belief in what you are capable of and what greatness really means.
Think about where DeAndre Jordan has come from. He was a second-round pick. He was a backup center. Now he's gone from that place in his life to now the starting center on the Olympic team, first team all-defense. He may be the player that most benefit from this out of any other player.
Yeah.
I mean, he grabbed, like, one game, it seems like he had, like, 30 rebounds. I think he had, like, 16 or 18 rebounds. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was a very dominant player in international play. Mm-hmm. And I can't imagine that confidence that he has right now, how that's going to translate to next year. I mean, he's one of the best of the best of the best right now. So for him, I get it when they say that because I'm feeling good, man. I'm 26 years old. This is my first championship. I get it. Now, after he wins a championship or two and he's able to reflect like Rick Buecher and BJ Armstrong is doing right now, he's probably going to say, Rick probably is right. But at the time.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
And that's what I see with these guys.
We're going to allow everybody youthful indiscretion because we've experienced it ourselves.
That's why you wasted on the young people. They don't know what they got.
So one, I was surprised, and I don't want to be one of those guys who the armchair, the Monday morning quarterback, you know, the second guesser. So I'll put it in these terms. I'm a little skeptical. You've taught me this. I'm cynical about stuff. I've become cynical. More cynical than I ever was because of my relationship with BJ Armstrong. and I'm probably smarter as a result. I saved myself from looking naive at times. But that said, I look at the politics of how you play guys in the Olympics and Team USA and pretty much whoever they were going to play. It's fair to say whatever your rotations were going to be, you were still going to win. I was surprised that Draymond didn't play more, and I was surprised that Paul George didn't play more. And yet, and this is what bothers me, is when guys who are probably not going to create a problem by not playing more or are not going to create an issue, then you don't play them more, not because they don't deserve it, but because you have other guys that you're going to have a problem with if they don't get the minutes or the run that they think they are deserving of. And I just, looking at this team, if you're talking about playing your best basketball, honestly, your most attractive team basketball, I would have played those two guys more than they played. Am I missing something in what you saw? Because here's the other part. Yeah, this is why I hate watching games on TV. You have the NBA pass, and you can check in onto a number. I can watch a multitude of games when I'm at home. But I can go to one game, and I can learn more because the cameras aren't forcing. They're not taking me away from the things that I want to see. I can see everything at that game, and I'm usually not looking at the ball to find out what I really want to know. I didn't have that opportunity in Rio. So you did. Am I wrong in my thinking that if we were just going to go based on ability or ideal rotation, that there might have been a different rotation?
This is no criticism of anyone that was there at USA Basketball, but this is what I saw and makes it very interesting. What I saw this year in the Olympics, I go, and I said to myself as I was watching the game, I said, I'm seeing a brand of basketball I haven't seen in years. And we're still winning with it, which is we were actually playing with a big man in the middle.
Yeah.
We were actually playing.
All the time.
All the time.
Yeah.
Now.
Because DeAndre or DeMarcus were on the floor almost the entire time.
And I said, wow, that's kind of unusual because I haven't seen it in like years now where we're playing actually through a big guy, where we're actually putting him on the post. We're playing around him and we're doing things like we used to play. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was interesting. And then I looked at the staff and I said, well, they don't get a chance to see the NBA game on a night-to-night basis like we see it. Hmm. Because if you were in the NBA, you're going to put Draymond Green as the center
right. On
the team.
Right.
Because, again, as we started off the show, what is our advantage? Speed and quickness. Versatility is our advantage. But we were playing traditional basketball. Mm-hmm. Draymond Green guards DeMarcus Cousins. He guards DeAndre Jordan.
Yep.
He guards Paul Gasol. And he's fine with them without a double team.
Right.
But here we are playing traditional basketball, trying to fight over picks.
Right.
With
right.
our team.
Instead of switching everything.
Instead of switching everything. And I thought, so I looked, I said, that's not fair to Coach K because Coach K doesn't have an opportunity.
Well, wait a minute, but Tom Thibodeau is on the staff.
But Coach K is the head coach. Coach K is the head coach.
But
it's easy to say that from the assistant. It's easy to give the recommendation. His job, he's got to make the decision. Now, he's won, so why change now? But I thought it was very interesting that we were playing traditional basketball, and that's not how we play in the NBA. We don't play that way anymore in the yeah. NBA. We don't play where guards fight over the top of screens anymore. We just switch.
So,
and the reason I'm pointing that out is we know that the NBA game is a much different game. It probably mimics more the international game than it ever has. And we played the Olympics and won the gold medal and didn't even do any of the things that we do in the NBA.
Yeah.
We didn't even switch. We didn't bring our Forbes guy pushing the break and doing all those things. We were actually getting it into DeMarcus and playing through him and drawing a double team. And I was
and then kicking it out.
And then kicking it out.
And
we were doing
threes.
All these things. And then I thought it was interesting because I hadn't seen it in so long, but that it's still effective. But I don't know how effective that would be actually in the NBA game.
Yeah.
So at some point here, one of these teams or one of these countries in Europe from Europe are going to exploit that because it was exploited, as you can see in the NBA. Now you don't need a center to actually win and be effective here. And now I think that's going to be something that we're going to, you know, continue to take advantage of. And you're going to see people actually, one of these countries is going to actually do it. And I think we're going to have to be prepared for this because, you know, that's the way you play basketball and that's the way the game is being played.
Before we leave this subject, and I want to ask you about Kobe Bryant, the new venture capitalist.
Oh, wow.
Is how do you feel about the selection? There's been a lot of talk about, look, we've proved we're the greatest. We would be better served to sort of take the Olympic soccer model and say, we're only going to take second, third, and fourth year players. It'll give us a chance to develop players. Here's the other part. Honestly, I don't know where the gold medal fits as far as an overall achievement for players at this point. It's a nice thing to add to the trophy cabinet. But for guys who've already won championships, for guys who are 5, 6, 7, 8 years into their career, where does this fit as an achievement? Whereas second, third, and fourth year guys, one, I think there would be more interest because we're getting to know these players on a better level. It would be more competitive, and it would mean something tremendous. Just as you said with like a guy like DeAndre Jordan, this is so meaningful to him because he hasn't achieved anything at this level to this point. I think everybody could potentially be served well if we took a slightly different approach, and even if it meant a risk that the games themselves were going to be more competitive or we were going to be at risk of not winning the gold. That ultimately, we've proved the point. If we put our absolute best on the floor, we're winning. Why do we have to continue that way? Why don't we do something that serves the game?
Well, you know, Rick, a lot of the things that you couldn't see, you know, behind the cameras is you know, you play pro sports and it's this life, right? We get on a charter plane, we go to a nice hotel, we check into the hotel, we go to the game, and we just complete it. And you sort of kind of get in this life, but that's not real life. Mm-hmm. The benefit of these young men and young women who play is the sportsmanship that you get an opportunity to see, the relationships that you get an opportunity to develop. Mm. And I think these kids benefit more from being around each other in this environment than anything. Because you're, when you see these people, you know, when I was there, I use myself as an example. It was great to run into Gary Payton and Glenn Rice
at this event. They were in Rio?
Yeah, they were doing some stuff for the NBA, some ambassador work and all the things that was there. You realize...
Oh, I didn't realize this was an NBA thing. I thought it was a Team USA.
Yeah, it was Team USA, but it was NBA people were there. You know, you see
Adam Silver.
Yeah, yeah, I know.
I'm kidding, because it's a vehicle, because Team USA is a freaking promotional vehicle for the NBA.
This is what's going to be great. DeAndre Jordan and Draymond Green is going to see each other 20 years from now.
Yeah.
And they're going to recall everything that they did.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Like going to the spa. What the hell? Come on, BJ.
Hey, BJ, come on. I can't comment on that one.
It's a brothel? We thought it was a spa. Shut up. If the camera's not there, we're still at the spa. That was... are you kidding me?
Hey, can we move on here? Can we move on? So the thing is, what we can't see is the development of these young people, not only on the court, but off the court. And I think it's important. I think it's important to be in a team setting. I think it's important to understand learning how to play your role on a team when winning is the only thing that matters.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of times you get caught up in all the other different things when you're playing, you know, on your team and in your respective sport. But there, all that matters is winning. And I think that's important. And I think it grounds you. I think it gives you a sense of like who you are, but more importantly, it gives you an opportunity to focus in on what the only thing that matters. You've heard me say it over and over again. Winning covers everything up.
Yeah.
So there's nothing else going on other than winning. And now this gives you an opportunity to kind of get yourself back on track. You know what? I enjoy being around the team and just playing my part on that team because in the end, Team USA won. That's all that really matters.
Before we leave the Olympics in general, and we are leaving Team USA, and this just came to mind. The Ryan Lochte situation, or as I call him, Lion Rochte, is there is some question about how that was handled and how, while he has received some criticism, I think about if that had been Draymond Green, or that had been DeAndre Jordan, or that had been an athlete of color, an NBA player, I'd say even an NFL player obviously doesn't apply in the Olympics, but you have a white swimmer who causes an international incident. And while he has been criticized and his sponsors have dropped him, there's a part of me that wonders, would it have been handled the same way if it was not a, you know, a Spicoli from Fast Times at Ridgemont High? And I don't throw this out there as let's investigate the race card, but it does always intrigue me on how things are handled. And I, for example, I'll look at the situation with Draymond in Michigan as an example, where it was, you know, we didn't have all the details, but there was already like kind of a perspective put out there on what happened and what Draymond did and who he was. And on the flip side, Lion Rocky got the benefit of the doubt until it became proved that he had lied. And he not only lied, but he deserted his teammates in Brazil, left them holding the bag. And while the sponsors have left him, I don't know that he's gotten the just criticism that all of that deserves. I just wonder for you, from your perspective, when you saw that, and you saw the reaction to that, and you represent Draymond Green, what was your thinking? What did you think?
You have these moments in your life where you can remember where you're at and what you were doing. Mm. So I was in the...
You were in the men's bathroom at that gas station when it happened?
No, I was at the VIP area of the team basketball, and I was like getting emails, and I was just there. And suddenly the security walks in and they said, "Hey, I just want you to know, Ryan, this thing goes down," and they show us a video immediately what happened. You know, it was all over the news there.
Who showed you the video?
USA Basketball Security. And they show us like the television. It's like it's on the news everywhere there. It's like on the news. I'm trying to set this up. So I see that, and you know, normally I have a filter, Rick. You know, I'm out in public. I have a filter. You know, I may be thinking something and I'll say it. And out of nowhere, I remember I said, "That's not true. No, he wasn't robbed." Like, I had been around Rio to know. First of all, what is four guys doing at a gas station?
Yeah.
In Rio.
Yeah.
In a cab.
Yeah.
Okay. All the security checks have said, please, first of all, do not take a cab.
Really?
Okay. Do not take Uber or whatever else. Please.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, that doesn't sound right. If someone's robbing you, right, or whatever, they're not just going to – that's not the way they're going to do it.
Yeah.
That was just my gut instinct. But I was like, anything's possible. We are here. Anything is possible. And when it came out, it kind of, you know, a day later or whatever it came out. And I remember the security guy came up to me, he goes, "How did you know that?" I was like, "I didn't know it. It didn't sound right to me." Mm-hmm. None of it sounded right. Like, it didn't sound right from the, like, how it was announced, mm-hmm. how it was. And these people were doing everything they could to make sure that this went as smooth as possible. Clearly, it wasn't perfect.
Yeah.
But the way it was done, the way he left his teammates, the way it was reported, the way, I mean, he took off immediately, left those people there, and it was like, it was back in the States already. It was like, and then you see these other two young men being escorted off the plane in the camera, and now Rio is trying to be like, wait a minute, we're not letting these people get away with this.
Right,
now
right.
They're exaggerating what really happened. So now it's really screwed. So now I'm like, okay. They got the cameras to show, hey, this is what really happened. Then you're like, is that really what happened? Or is this what? So now I don't know what to think, what really happened there. But at the same time, it was, I didn't like it. I thought it was poor in taste. Hmm. Clearly it was it wasn't thought out well by the young man who did that. And you know, I think he's like 30-something years old.
32. Right? 32 years old.
32 years old. So, I mean, all right, you're 20, you made a bad choice.
Yep.
At 32, you're like, okay, what's really going on
right,
here?
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
So it was just, I was very disappointed. But at the same time, it just put everyone in an uncomfortable position.
Yeah.
Especially the Americans, because now all the people are looking at you like, oh, okay, yeah, this is how you guys do it? You know, it was like one of those things. Like, no, he's not speaking for us. It was just something that happened.
Right.
I don't know how if it was a black athlete. I can't really say. But I can say this. I think clearly, why would you be taking a cab in Rio is my question to these people. Where are they from? Like, where are you from where you're taking a cab at that time at night in Rio?
Yeah. Or where were you?
You know what I'm saying? Clearly, you haven't lived in New York or LA or some metropolitan area. You know not to do certain things at certain times.
My guess?
Where are these people from?
My guess? They were at a spa.
Are we going to play this game? That's... What were they really doing?
Yeah. So before we wrap this podcast by BJ and Bucher, this rendition up by the cycle, I want to ask you about Kobe Bryant and his decision that he's going into venture capitalism. And not just that he's going into venture capitalism, but that he is saying that this will be a greater achievement in some ways than what he did as basketball. The basketball, everybody wins championships, and different people are going to win championships, but this is an opportunity to inspire the next generation who inspires the next generation. And I like a lot of what he's saying. There's truth in everything that he's saying. And certainly, when I look at some of the venture capitalists out there, my feeling is, why not? Why can't Kobe be better than some of the venture capitalists that I already know out there? That there's no reason that he can't be a success at it. I just find it very interesting that he's almost diminishing his basketball achievements to say, this is going to be even greater than what I achieved as a basketball player. What did you think when you, I don't know if you read it, I don't know if you saw it, I know you're just getting back into the country, but what was your reaction when you heard about Kobe announcing that this was his next venture?
Well, my immediate reaction was Kobe Bryant has already come to terms with the limitation of being an athlete. Kobe Bryant has already moved on.
Yes. How extraordinary is that, considering... You could make the case that Michael was never able to do that, and Kobe and that competitive spirit, that all-consuming passion for the game, was very similar in the two of them. His ability to do that, you could make the case that Michael hasn't.
The moment I heard Kobe do this, you know, I said, he's already come to grips. It's over. It's done. Now, whether or not he believes it or not, only time will tell.
Yeah.
I remember in my own case, I remember my own thoughts. It's over. In looking back at, in reflecting back on it, I wish I would have chosen to do something where I could have a lifetime of committing to excellence. Again, I wish I would have chosen something where I could have a lifetime of committing to excellence.
Rather than basketball.
Rather than basketball. Because of the limitations of the game, the physical limitations of playing a sport. I wish I would have chosen something where I can have a lifetime of achieving, you know, like, you know, when you see people like Einstein and you see people who, artists, Picasso, they can pursue this for a lifetime.
Honestly,
they can.
Writing, that's what I love about writing, because I thought I can do that until I die.
So when I saw that, I thought, okay, it takes courage and a leap of faith to figure that out. But more importantly, for him to stop. You know, because Kobe has obviously achieved, you know, excellence in professional sports and basketball in particular. But now I thought, wow, here's a young man that's kind of figured it out. This generation, Rick, I thought is, I've often said it and I continue to say it, they were so much further ahead than us. And because they have more information, they're more prepared. And to see him move on, like Rick, he moved right on.
Yeah.
Okay. As soon as I was done, I moved right on to the next thing. I didn't wait. I didn't have a time lapse. You move on. You don't figure. Life happens right now, Rick.
Yeah.
And the young man, whether it works or not, give him credit for moving on and being present in the moment. So I was great to hear it. I hope he understands what he's doing. There's going to be a lot of trials and tribulations and anything that a professional athlete does after he gets done. But the most important thing that I think that athletes don't, I don't think they give it enough, I don't think they put enough emphasis on it, is the failures that you do, that's part of the process. Don't give yourself a choice to fail. There's only one choice here. I got to make this work. So whatever Kobe decides to do, do it. Yep. You know, and when I decided to become an agent, I didn't give myself a choice. My choice is this is I'm going to make this work. Now, are there going to be bumps? There are going to be highs, lows, failures, and all. Yes, of course there is. But the one thing that you must take with you is the tenacity and all of the things that you need, and you attack it and you go for it. And I was really happy to hear him, that young man, say, you know what, this is what I'm doing.
Right.
And I'm going for this. And the most important thing is he's taking ownership in it. That's the key. That's the key. He's taking ownership in something. So when you see young people do this at his age, the man has a chance.
Yeah.
Now, and I hope he gives himself a chance. You know, whether it works or not, you know, if it doesn't work, keep going.
Right.
Keep fighting the good fight, because, you know, that's what it's all about.
And find that thing that will consume you for the rest
absolutely.
Of your life.
Absolutely.
This may not be it. This is my one other theory to this, because I believe you'd agree with me on this. When Kobe was playing, the goal was, I'm going to achieve more. And I want to say that he either said it to me or somebody who had spoken to him told me this, that it wasn't like, I want to prove that I'm better than Michael or I've done more than Michael. I just want to be in the conversation. I just want to achieve so much that people will put my name, Kobe Bryant, in the conversation when we talk about the all-time greats, when we talk about Michael, when we talk about Kareem, when we talk about all those. That's what I'm going for. And ultimately, the numbers and some of the benchmarks that people use, I think he didn't quite get there. So how do I prove? How do I win the game? Like you said, it's always 0-0. You're always starting at 0-0. So how do I prove that I am ultimately, like, I've achieved more, I've done more? Well, one way is to achieve all that I have in basketball and say, you know what? The game still hasn't ended. And I'm going to move on from that game. I'm bigger than that game. That game does not own me. I owned that game, and watch me go on to the next thing and not regret the fact that I can no longer play in that other game. I have to believe that that's some of what is informing this narrative that Kobe is giving me right now. Because I appreciate that he's moving on, and I appreciate that he recognizes, which is a very much the truth, which for all that we glorify the champions now and the MVPs now and all that, you know what? There's going to be another one. We can have the number one podcast, and that may be the goal. But you know what? At some point, it's not going to be, and there's going to be another one that's the number one podcast.
Right.
So you understand that in the big picture, that everything is transitive. But I can't help but feel at this point that some of this is motivated by the fact that Kobe is still competing in a way, and this is a way of saying, no, I'm not done, and I can't be defined simply by my basketball career, because that would mean that I'm placing myself somewhere other than first.
Well, some of these young men, I get a chance to peek behind the curtain.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I camera's on, you're one way.
Yep.
The camera's off, you're another way. Now, Rick, you and I have had this opportunity that many of our listeners and many of the people who view the game as fans, they don't get a chance to see. Some people, the camera comes on, and you're like, that person's not really like that. You and I know that.
Mm-hmm.
I think what you said, I agree with what you said. But the thing about Kobe Bryant, that guy that you saw on the camera is the same guy that when the camera's off, he's going to be the same guy in business. He's going to be the same guy. This is who he is.
I agree.
This is what I admire about him. I whether I agree with it, doesn't matter. Kobe Bryant is going to attack every single thing, and the game never stops with him.
Right.
So it's not even about winning. Some people are wired to this. They just enjoy the competition.
Yes.
Kobe Bryant has to compete. That's who he is.
Yeah.
He doesn't care really about the score. It's like when I play with guys. Some people, they just need a game going.
Yep.
They know the score, it doesn't really matter.
Mm-hmm.
They just need a game.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Kobe Bryant is Kobe Bryant on the court. And you know what a genius does? He transfers that skill and redirects it.
Yep.
He takes his energy and he just redirects it. Now, that's to me is the genius. I got bad grades as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
One time in school, And my dad, I was like, "Dad, I really don't like school, but I love basketball." Right. He was like, "Well, you don't like basketball then, because you're not the same person in school that you are on the basketball court. You can't just turn it on and turn it off. You are who you are 24 hours a day. Don't turn it on, well, I like basketball, but I don't like school. Wait a minute, because you're letting school get in the way of what you really want to do. So you don't really like it, because if you really like it, you're going to do what you need to do."
That's pretty
good. Now, Rick, Kobe Bryant, this is who he really is.
Yeah. Well, this is the other part that I like about Kobe, is that we can look at it and say, oh, this is what Kobe's up to. Kobe will convince himself that this is the reality. Like he has the ability to create a vision and then live within that vision as if it is. We can look at it from the outside and go, okay, this is what's really going on. And Kobe, I don't know whether he's conscious of it or not, but he just decides, this is going to be my reality, and this is the reality that I'm going to live in, and goes on from there.
He's got the gene that I don't wish on anybody, but all successful people have it. He's stubborn.
Yeah.
Rick, the man is incredibly stubborn.
Yep.
So it doesn't matter if he's right or wrong or indifferent. Once he sets his mind to it,
There he goes.
Yep. And everybody that knows him. See, I know Rick Bucher. Rick Bucher is incredibly stubborn. So it don't matter if I'm right. So that's why you and I can have this podcast. It doesn't matter about right or wrong.
Right.
Because, Rick, you already have your opinion on it. Right. It's just the game.
I'm willing to hear yours.
Yeah, you're willing to hear, but you're right anyway. So it doesn't really matter, and we move on. That's. I mean, how long have we been doing this? How long is this game?
Since we've known each other, basically, back and forth. Well, it's not a matter. You know what? It's not a matter of right or wrong. It's not a matter of right or wrong. It's a matter of if I can get you to go, okay, wait a minute, I think he's got something there. That's the victory. That is the victory. Because I know what you're thinking, and all I got to do is to get you. It's that little hesitation. It's like, it's the same as when you're on a court, right? And you get that guy that just kind of go, oh, right? You get that little pause. You go, oh, I just laid something on him. That is the victory right there. Uh-huh. Yeah, I got you.
Rick, but I'm never going to admit to defeat. So that's why this keeps going.
Yeah.
You know, and getting back to Kobe, I think that's who he is. This is who he, and I was very happy for him because he's allowing people to see who he really is. And to be able to take that energy that he's used to in one area to move it to another. So, you know, I wish him nothing but the best. And I think he's given another example of, you know what, life goes on. It's going to go on with you or without you, so you might as well get in and go for it.
Yeah. Well, we are going to close it on that note. As you noted, this will continue. We will have another podcast, oh, for sure. I hope you've enjoyed yet another rendition of the BJ and Bucher podcast on the cycle. We will get back to you again next week. See you, BJ.
Yep.